Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Matilda Mwava-Lucas. I do apologize for the technical difficulty we experienced not too long ago. Somehow the program dropped us, but we were able to rectify that. And I just want to welcome back our guests and our callers. Nathan, good morning. Thank you for joining. Hello.
Good morning, Ms. Lucas.
Good morning, Roger.
Yes.
And
yes.
Nathan. We had a technical difficulty there, but it has been fixed. I'm just waiting for my guests to call back in. I don't know what I can say, but I'm glad it has been fixed. So this today's topic is going to be Mother's Day in the diaspora. So, Roger and Nathan, I hope both of you have prepared a special weekend for your wives, the mothers in your life.
That's a setup, Roger. That's a setup.
Big one.
Yes, we have, Matilda.
you better. And if you haven't, it's still Saturday morning, so please, go and run and get your wife some flowers, something. Cook, clean somewhere. Something special.
Okay. Do Zambian women like flowers anyway? If I may ask.
You know
my,
what?
My wife doesn't care.
Roger, that's an excellent question.
My wife doesn't care for flowers.
We are, one of my guests has joined us. Her name is Zahara Yukasuk. She's from Sudan. So she will be able to give us a perspective if African women love flowers. Zahara, good morning.
Good morning, Matilda.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I apologize there for the lateness of the show to start. But Roger has asked a question. African women, do they love flowers? Zahara, what's your take on that?
African women, they don't like flowers. The flower is like nothing to them.
Okay.
That's a good one.
I think Zahara is speaking for herself. Okay.
No, she's not. I can tell you from my house. She's not speaking for herself.
We are waiting for two other ladies to join us. Happy Mother's Day, Zahara.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Zahara, as I mentioned before, is from Sudan. She's a mother of five. And we will get a very interesting perspective of how Mother's Day is celebrated in Sudan, if at all they celebrate that, and how she has been celebrating it since she's been in the U.S. Vanessa, and I hope you've also prepared a special day for your wife.
Yes.
Mwaseka sana. My other guest has joined us, Sipo. Sipo is a Zambian. She's also a mother of three and is living in the diaspora. Sipo, good morning and welcome to Diaspora and Truth.
Thank you. Good morning.
Sipo, right before you joined us, the question that was asked was, do African women love flowers? Do you like flowers? Do you receive flowers even on Mother's Day?
You know what? I can't generalize that and say that African women, but personally, I admire them. I like them when they're nervous, but don't go and waste your money on flowers for me.
2 points for the men.
Like that $50, it can pay a bill, okay?
That's very honest. She's very honest.
Oh, my God. Well, ladies, we are trying to change the tables around and we want to receive flowers, but that's okay.
I'm not saying we don't want to receive them. I would love to receive them, but you know what's available now instead of flowers, that's a good idea, is the fruit that's made into flowers. I love fruit, so buy me fruit. I will appreciate that because I can get some nutrition out of it rather than them just looking pretty.
Mm-hmm. So, ladies, we'll go ahead and start the program. Today, this weekend in the United States, we are celebrating Mother's Day, and I know Mother's Day is celebrated on different days depending on which part of the world you live in. I'll just go ahead and start by asking questions. First of all, I mean, there are joys and challenges of being a mother. But on now that the world is setting aside the day to celebrate mothers, how do you take this as mothers? Sipo, I'll start with you. Is it something that you think should be done often, or do you think it's not a big deal? What's your take?
I think it should be. I think I like it the way it is. Put out one day that's special for the mothers, because if we did it more often again, it would be like, okay, it's just like any other day. So I like it the way it is, and I think I don't know if every country does have it at their own time. Being Zambian, I don't ever remember as a kid having a day set aside for mothers. What I remember was mom, whenever she felt like taking a day off at work, was Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. I guess they would give so many days off to take off as Mother's Day or Woman's Day that they call it. So anytime she felt like being off from work, she took advantage of that Mother's Day.
Zahara, do you celebrate Mother's Day in Sudan?
They have it, but in, you know, to us back home, like in Sudan, every day is Mother's Day. Every day mothers are honored. They have been respected. And for whatever they do every day, they've been appreciated. I can see mothers are being treated very well in Africa more than here in the diaspora.
Okay. And so, you know, you mentioned something very important. Mothers are being honored, and today is a day, a celebration to honor our mothers. You can be a mother being honored. You honor your sisters who are mothers, your own mother, and so on, your children if they are mothers, and so on. Now, Zahara, you did mention something very important. You know, that you say, you see that mothers in Canada, I'm sorry, in Sudan, are honored more than they are honored here. Would you like to share a little bit more on what you meant on that?
Yeah, because they, if you have kids or your nieces or relatives, everybody, you will feel that you are really being respected more than here. If you find any child or anybody in the street, they will greet you, oh, mama so-and-so, and they will show you that love. But
mm-hmm.
here, it's only that your kid can give that to you. But
right.
other than that, you find somebody's child doing something bad, as a mother, you want to stop them, you cannot do that. But we feel so bad because as a mother, you feel any child is like your child. So you want them to be in a good path and they should be in a safe place. Like here sometimes
yes.
children have been abused and we cannot act as somebody. You are not family, you are not nothing, you cannot act. But back home you can act straight.
You can be straight. So,
yeah,
as a mother. I will come back to being as strict, you know, being a strict parent, and we'll talk about what that means. Zahara, I believe you've had your children both in Sudan and here. You've given birth to your children in Sudan, and you also gave them birth here. What is the difference? What would be the experience of having, you know, being away from home compared to when you were at home when you had your child?
When I had my children back home, I had two in Sudan and one in Egypt. When I had them there, it was fun because all the family, they came together during the time we were naming the child. We have a celebration. And 40 days after birth, we have another celebration. So all the family and friends, they come together. We have a lot of fun. So, but here, it's not that much. You will be by yourself. As when you have delivered the baby, by the time you are back home, you have helpers. They will help you so that then you have to rest and get enough rest until you finish the 40 days. Then from there, when they do the celebration, then from there again, you will start your work as a mother in the house. But before that 40 days, you cannot touch anything in the house. You just take shower and go. Everything, food, everything has been prepared for you. But here, from the hospital, you come home, you have to get into the kitchen and do something for your family and yourself.
So, Sipo, let me bring you in the conversation. I know with your youngest at the time that you were giving birth, you were still in school and you were working. And I remember coming to the hospital to see you with the baby, and you had your books. You were studying. I think you had an exam. Can just share a little bit of experience, you know, what you experienced. We have listeners from all over the world. We have people listening in Zambia, in Europe, and so on. But just give us a glimpse of what you had experienced during that time.
Well, the part about being a mother was the fun part. I don't like school too much. I only go to school for the usual purposes. So that was the biggest challenge. But it's a personal thing. It's hard to kind of explain as to, you know, one person might find it a little bit, you know, it wasn't so hard. Like the Zahara was saying, if you have anybody to help you with a baby, you can do your schoolwork. But if you don't, like in my case, yes, it was pretty hard. Because once your child goes to sleep, you cannot take any time off to rest. I had to log on to the computer and start doing my work. So I used to find myself maybe with 3-4 hours of sleep in a day. So, yeah, it was not fun at all. So kudos to all those who are, you know, doing that, having babies and going to school at the same time. It's not an easy task at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are having around an open discussion, so if anybody would like to join in, for those who have called, just press 1, and I will open up the mic so you can contribute. So, you know, when the experience that Zahara just explained, where you have that 40 days, you're not doing anything, your family is there to help you, taking care of the babies, all you do is just sleep and let your body, you know, rest and get back to its normal shape. Whereas here, there's no time. The world is not going to wait for you. You have school waiting. There's homework. You have bills waiting constantly. So you find that your resting time is very short. You have to go back to work. So I do see the importance of where mothers are, the special days taken to honor mothers. And, you know, single mothers and married mothers, they experience the same, well, I can't say the same, but they have almost the same kind of challenges. You sacrifice so much for that child to have everything that they can. And so I do see that importance. It's absolutely wonderful. Roger, I can see you are itching to say something here. Go ahead and we'll bring you in the conversation.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lucas. I think this Mother's Day, to me, it's going to be quite special. I've seen quite a bit of things. It started with President Obama. He was asked a question in Thailand. What was one of his regrets? President Obama said it was him not spending a lot of time with his mom. His mom died when he was quite young. And I reflected on that, how I, especially the boys, we the boys, I can speak for some of the boys who are here. We don't normally call our mothers so often to talk. And then you just hear your mom has gone. You begin to reflect on some of the of those things. Last week, the player for the Thunders, Oklahoma Thunders, it went viral on how he made his mom very proud. His mom was crying. Mom went to sleep, to bed sometimes without eating, just to preserve some food for the children. And I thought that was a very special, which makes us men, our husbands, very different from women. Men, if there is only maybe say a piece of bread or it goes out, you would rather eat out before bringing home. Women who sacrifice, on the other hand, bring it home for the children and feed the children without her eating, which makes moms very, very special. Lastly, there is a commercial on TV. Yeah, I have
there's some kind of echoing. I'm not sure, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I'll finish quickly. There's a commercial on TV right here where it is they're asking this gentleman to remember the day he was born, what happened to him when he was born. And he says, oh, I can't remember anything. But the mom says, yes, your mom remembers that very crucial, if it was 30 minutes or 1 hour of labor, it was really, really painful, and she still remembers that. You better do something for your mom. So when we take our moms for granted, I think we need to reflect back even where we came from, what our mothers have gone through raising us up, what our mothers went through even in labor, you know. Ngawakula, you grow up, you're just posting around the house, you know, forgetting where you even came from. But I think it is very important for us to honor our moms and those we live with everywhere we are.
Mm-hmm. No, Roger, it's actually very crucial. We are all who we are because of how we were brought up. And speaking of being, you know, part of our upbringing was being having a strict parent. And Zahara had mentioned, you know, about being strict. Zahara lives here in Kansas City at some apartment complexes where everybody knows that Zahara is the mom for all the kids there. She's continued on with what she had experienced growing up. There were people who were strict on her so that she can behave well and grow up to be a model citizen, and she's continued on with that. Zahara, share with us, you know, how strict you are on your children and the children around you.
Can you repeat that?
I'm sorry. I was talking about being strict. You know, I know your mom and your parents were very strict, and your mother was, and you've continued to be strict. So I was saying, could you share with us how strict you are with your children and the children who are around you?
Yeah, around us we have a lot of children from different nationalization. Some from Africa, some from Mexico, some from here, white and black. So it is very important that you see whoever can move with a child according to the behaviors and, you know, the different nationalization, because there is a lot of stuff happening here. You don't want your children to be victims of it. And also, if you see somebody in the neighborhood that's doing wrong thing, like a child, you can advise them, don't do that. If they listen, it's okay. If they don't listen, you just keep away, but you try first.
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
I see the children doing something, or if they are late outside here and no adult with them, I will tell them, go inside. My kids, they try to tell me they are not your kids. Why are you telling them? I just laugh at them and I do what I'm supposed to do. That's it.
Do other mothers, especially American moms, do they come to you and say, you can't talk to my child like that?
No, never happened.
Okay. Has any of them ever come up and say, wow, thank you, I don't know how to deal with my child, but you said something and it made a difference?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know people is not shy even stepping in when she sees something is not going well, you know, step in and say, don't talk to your mother like that, you know.
People,
I know that your mom passed on, but you have aunts and cousins who have stepped in that motherly role. How would you describe our parenting style in Zambia in terms of mothers, people mothering those children who are not theirs?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I can't really hear.
Let me try to mute some of the phones. Okay. Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Can you please repeat?
Absolutely. Yes, there was some static. I was asking you to describe the parenting style in Zambia. I know your mother passed. How can you describe, you know, aunts and cousins and other people stepping in that role of mother, of your mother?
Well, first I have to understand that none of my, you know, family members are here close by the way they are at home. So that's something I have to accept. But in terms of
the style, I really have not changed from the way I believe, you know, my mother did something right. The way she raised me is the way I would like to raise my children, because I see how other parents, you know, their styles have led their children to end up in doing the wrong thing. So I would like, my mother told it as it is. She explained to you why she's telling you not to do something because of the consequences of your actions, and she would give us examples of what people did and what led them to becoming the way they are. It could be an illness. My mother did not lie to us, oh, you're kids, so we shouldn't tell you the truth. No. Fine, she wouldn't say it in front of everybody, but when we're in the privacy of our own home, she would tell us, okay, this one, you see that person over there, they did this, this, and that, and that's what led them to being the way you see them just today. Even the successful people, she would say, you see, those people who are successful because they went to school, look at them, they're doing well today, or, you know, their business is doing well, whatever. Every successful thing and failures, she would explain to us what happened. And I appreciated the fact that my mother was open, because sometimes we just tell our kids, no, don't do that. The child doesn't know why you're telling them, you know, no. Why is always the question. When they're little, when they're about 2 years old, they have the confidence to say why. But as they get older, because we've trained them not to ask why, they will keep quiet, but they don't understand what's going on. So I think a lot of mistakes that parents in general and society, we don't explain why we're saying no. You know, even just if we go religiously, the Bible, I'm a Christian, so the Bible does explain why it's saying no, or why it's saying do not do something. So I think it's very important to explain why you're saying no, and or why you are doing certain things, so that the children, you don't have that, the children don't end up, what's the word I'm looking for, rebellious. Because if you're just saying no with no reason, they tend to be rebellious.
Right. So, you know, we are here in America, and the first time we came here, of course, is that cultural shock. We are not, as I say, you are not in, you know, you and I in Kansas City, but the general statement is you are not in Kansas anymore. But we were not in Africa anymore. We came in, a lot of shocking things that we saw. And now we've become part of this American society. So both Sipo and Zahara, if you can take turns in answering this, and if there are callers out there who would like to say something, feel free to press 1 and I will open up your mic so you can say something. So first describe your experience when you saw mothers interacting with their children when you first arrived here. And then now that you've become a mom, how are the difference still that apparent? Like, yeah. I now understand, or I still don't understand why they do that. So let's start with the first time you got here. What shocked you about mother-child relationship?
I will be honest to say I was not... when I came in, I was 20. I had no kids. I was not even paying attention to anybody who had a child. It was all about me, you know. And I'm thankful that I had a chance to get used to the American way before I had a child. But the one thing I saw about Americans and their children is that maybe it's because of the circumstances, they don't have the money to pay that extra help, or a lot of relatives to help them around. There's that closeness with their children. I say this because personally, I had grandmother, aunties, uncles. It was like, I think the first 10 years of my life, I hardly ever spent them with my mother. I was always being taken care of by this person, that person. And I think I really wanted that closeness. So when I saw the closeness that the Americans have with their children, I appreciated that. And I said, you know what, that's what I want to do. I'd like to emulate that. It's mm-hmm. hard. I mean, it would be nice to have that extra help, of course. But at the end of the day, I like the fact that they're always together. Even when they grow up, the children, they are always with their parents. My workmates, every time, weekends, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to my mom's. Well, who stays with your kids? You know, you ask them, oh, they're with my mother. I always feel like I'm the only one who leaves my kids with, you know, at daycare. But that's my personal experience. I'm sure other people have had different experiences.
Right. And before I have Zahara speak, I just want to let the listeners know it is Mother's Day, and I'm talking to two moms who are busy with their children, so you will hear a lot of background noise. Their kids are there, and, you know, nobody should take any kind of offense that there's so much noise, please. These are mothers, and they are waking up early in the morning on this show with their children. So just bear with us if there's any background noise. That is a joy of being a mother. Zahara, come in and share your experience, you know, when you first came to the U.S., what you had seen, you know, the relationship between the American moms and their children, and what your experience is now that you're a mother living in the U.S.
Yeah, my experience is as my sister been talking about. Yeah, for real, it is fun when you have your family here, like what she said, the only one taking her kids to the daycare. The same thing with me. I have three little ones, and I have to pay for the daycare, because if I don't pay for the daycare, I have to quit the job.
Right.
So I don't want to quit my job. I want to be busy doing my job and taking care of the kids at the same time. When you get out from work, you have to rush to go to the hurry up to the babysitter so you can take your baby. If you have something that's missing at home, you have to run fast to the store and get it and go get the kids, because you cannot go do shopping with three kids with you. It's hard. So if you delay for a few minutes, you will hear a phone call from the babysitter. So you're going to pay extra money because you delayed. But if you have your mother or family member that can take care of these kids, you can do anything, not in rush, that you will end up in doing accident or something. And the love that the kids will get from you and from the relatives will be much more better than the one from the babysitter, because you don't know the language you're speaking in the houses, and your kids may learn some of that language. Like one of my kids, before he was saying bad words, he was just a baby, and we don't say those words, and we say, what? Where did he get these words from? Finally, we find the husband of the babysitter, he was the one cursing and doing this. When we found it out, we took the boy out from there, and we try to discipline him. We get him back on track, so everything was fine. Since that day, we've been telling him, if you hear somebody saying something bad, tell us. Don't act and do that the same thing. That's what we catch him up to now. If you point with a different finger, he will come and touch your finger and say, don't do that, that's a bad finger, don't do that.
That's good. You know. You know, Zahara, you mentioned one thing, you know, picking up your kids, if you're late, the daycare will charge you. There are lessons in that. We learn to be on time. And the children also learn, you know, to work within time. But you also mentioned a disadvantage to that is there's really that the bonding is cut off so immediately that you don't have enough time to say your goodbyes properly and conclude very nicely. It's very quick. You come pick your kids, you go, and you move on to the next place. I see that we have a caller, and I think it should have been one of our guests here. Area code 929, ending in 9051. Go ahead and introduce yourself, and welcome to Dash Brunch.
Hi, Matilda. This is Exilda from Noya.
Exilda,
hello,
can welcome.
You hear? Oh, thank you. I've been listening and following all the conversation, and it's true what most of the people are saying over there. I know I'm a mother of two boys, you know, 4 and 6 now, and it's been a challenge, you know, especially being here in America, you know. You don't have a family to help, and it's all between you and your husband, you know. If you look back home, the way we were brought up, you know, our parents never used to worry whether they leave us alone in the house or not. But over here, if you leave your kids by themselves, you're going to end up losing them or something bad might happen to them. And that kind of prevent a lot of mothers, you know, to really progress, you know. They don't have time to, like, do things of their own. And sometimes, you know, most parents that are here in America, they have to work, you know. They have to find ways to meet ends meet. And most of the kids, they end up with strangers. We take our babies to babysitters, just like my sister was there before was saying, you know. And from there, they learn a lot of things. We spend little time with our own children, and they spend more time with other people. And as much time they spend with other people, we don't know what they are learning. We don't know what they are adapting, you know, from them. And just like she said, you hear the baby using bad language, and yet in the house we don't use any bad language. You know, those are some of the challenges that, you know, we see. And most of the things that we see in our kids, it's not like, okay, they are studying them from within their homes. They are learning from other people. Am I trying to discipline my son the way I was raised up? Because, you know, we were raised up with a whip. You do something wrong, they beat you. Over here, the child does something wrong, it becomes an issue. You beat him, and if he's old enough, knows what to do, he's going to call police on you, which is a challenge. And as a parent, how are you going to discipline your child when you're trying to tell the child the right thing, and the child is saying, Mom, I'm going to call police on you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the challenges that we really face. We try to, like, incorporate our traditional values from back home in the where we are bringing them up. But again, you know, it doesn't really work so well for us. It's a challenge. Right now I'm fighting with my 6-year-old son, you know. I tell him, don't do this, and he'll be like, no, Mommy, you're not supposed to tell me this, you know. He knows what his rights are. And it's just a pity. It's just a pity, you know, but it's a big challenge as a parent. You just have to do what is right. Try to do our job as much as we can, you know, help them, you know, understand wrong and good. And I know, of course, they're going to grow up, go to school, and then learn other stuff, you know, other behaviors from their friends here and there. But the more we get too close to them, talk to them about wrong or good, the better, you know, their outcome will be, you know. Besides that, we just have to pray for them each and every day, and you know, introduce them to, you know, to the church. They have to know, you know, that God exists, and God, you know, is going to reward them if they do something good in their lives, and if they do something wrong, God is going to punish them, you know, things like that, you know. Thank you.
Except that the last comment, that was interesting. God is going to, well, we won't go into that religious aspect. Pastor Nathan is on the phone. He might preach a sermon on what God will do or not.
Yeah.
you know, I hear this from almost every African mother here. When they're expecting, they say, oh, I wish my mother was here. Of course, we all wish our mothers were here. When they give birth, I wish my mother was here. Of course, there's that women know absolutely that you need your mother to help you with certain things. But then when you start wanting to have somebody to take care of your child, we all wish our moms were here. Can we call that honoring our mothers, or is our mothers supposed to be, should they come here and be our babysitters? I know this is this is a tricky question. Sipho, and then Exilda.
Not really, you know. We don't want to honor our mothers in such a way. We're not wishing them to come here to be babysitters. You know what we wish? We just wish they were here with us. You know, they used to give us that love. They used to have that much time for us, you know. And we can honor them right here. We can honor them when they're right here with us. We can still honor them right where they are, you know. At least, you know, it's a commitment like every week. We are not there for them. We don't see them each and every day. At least every week, call them, tell mom, how you doing? Oh, I miss you, I love you, things like that. And if you have some means, you know, of course we have a lot of bills to pay each and every month here, you know, but, you know, send them something, you know, remember them just a little. It doesn't matter how your parents are doing back home, whether they are doing good in business, or they're working, or they have a good life there. Anything that you take out of your sweat, you send $100 to your mom, she's going to be happy. Like, oh, one hour, the Andrew Kshako, you know, stuff like that. So there are so many ways to honor them, you know. Not really them coming here to be babysitter. We don't want to do that. If they come here, let them come here so we can enjoy staying with them, you know, and let us feel like babies, you know. Again, of course, we are mothers, and we have our mothers too. We want to feel like, okay, we are also somebody's babies, you know?
Well, you know, I know when I say babysitter to come out negative, but there a lot of times we share that sentiment. If mom,
yeah, a lot of people were like, oh, I'm planning to arrange my mom to come in to come and help me, you know, take care of my kids. But that's not the right way. That's not the right way, you know. And of course, you know, you can bring an old woman here. They're gonna be homesick. They would stay a few couple months, and then suddenly they'll be like, oh, missing, because the kind of lifestyle they live back home is totally different from here. You know, there are a lot of things that really doesn't work for them. Of course, they can be happy to be here for a few months, not forever. That's reality, because even me right now, baby, I'm homesick. I'm here with my two boys and my husband. I don't have any other relative, you know, in New York City. So everything is just surrounding me. I can't even go out look for a job. I'm looking for a job. They ask me the schedule they have in the night, and Saturday and Sunday. Who's going to take care of my kids on Saturday and Sunday? You know,
okay.
It's a big challenge.
So what do you say? Well, what are your comments on that? We'll be rounding our program here very quickly, but I'll let you comment.
My comment on which one?
And I was asking Sipho. Let me see. Sipho, are you still on the line?
Yeah. First, my comment is to thank, you know, one gentleman caller. I really liked his honesty on giving us a view of the male perspective, as in, you know, a mother will go without food to feed her family. A man will go out there and eat and then pretend doesn't care, really. Not that it's all of them, but, you know, that's what he kind of was just giving an example. And I like that. I wish there were more male callers to give us what they think of their mothers and how they feel they should treat their mothers or their wives, who have, you know. And a comment on mothers coming to be babysitters. I think the reality of it is that, yes, they are, because even if we were home,
you don't stay with them in the same house. They might be in the village in a different town, or they might be living in the same town with you. But when that time comes for you to have a child, they will tell everybody, okay, my child is about to have a baby. So I'm going to stay with them to help out with that, with the new baby. So they're already coming to you knowing that their job is to come and help you take care of the child. So I think the whole term of being a babysitter, there's nothing wrong. I don't see anything wrong with that. I think where it becomes wrong is when you start to treat her like, you know, she's a paid babysitter.
Paid for you, right. So, ladies, I wish we could have started this conversation on time, but we had major technical difficulties and hence starting so late and just had a very casual conversation. You know, Mother's Day is important. We should be honored. There are those, you know, it is difficult. Let me just conclude by saying this. This day can be very difficult for those who have recently lost their mothers. It may not have been recent, but their mothers are not there to celebrate this day with them. It's difficult for those who have lost their children, their mothers, but all their children have passed away. It's difficult for those who would like to be mothers and do not have any children. Also difficult for children who have been adopted and may not have had maybe a great relationship with their adopted parents, or maybe may have had, but they keep wondering why they were given up. So sometimes Mother's Day can be very difficult. And I'm grateful for being here in this American diaspora and see how the Americans do set this time aside to really honor their mothers. When you look at the American mom, white, black, Mexican, foreigners, it's a different ball game than when you are back home. So husbands, fathers, brothers, children, whatever, please take time to honor the women who are mothers in your life. It's also a difficult time for those who are in the Nigerian women who have lost, whose children have been kidnapped by this Nigerian militia. You know, it may not be Mother's Day in Nigeria, but it is a difficult time for them. So even as we take time to honor them, please just take some time to pray for these women. This is a very heartbreaking and difficult time for them. You know, their girls have been kidnapped. We don't know where they are. We don't know what's going on. I will open up the lines. I know, Roger, you may be getting ready to take the show on. And Nathan, if you'd like to say something else. Hello?
I think we are good, and we are, I think, ready to start this open forum.
Okay, let me just thank my guests. People, thank you for calling in. Exilda and Zahara, I really appreciate your input today. Happy Mother's Day. We are now going to transit into open forum. Roger, are you going to conclude with the song, or should I go ahead and close us out?
Yes. No, thank you so much, and we will introduce a simple song, and then we'll go to open forum. Thank you, Ms. Lucas.
Thank you so much. Have a good day, and happy Mother's Day.
Hasi bonanga, bonanga utadiwe chuchina, la pekuna, la wafela kuna. kona how ngithi hey wena
hey wena
hey wena hey wena nawe
so viva nini la siya
kona la siya
kona
Good morning and welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio. My name is Roger Charlie here in Okotoks, Alberta, Canada. Johnny Craig, Asibonanga, where are you? Mr. Mandela. This morning, Nathan, I'm happy to announce that there is a little bit of improvement in our weather situation. We have spring weather. It is raining. So I don't have so much to complain about today as my good friend Bianchi is going to... watch baseball, but I think I can tell you today I feel like a little bit at home.
That's good.
Yes. Let me check our good friends. And then you guys in, it's only springtime in Texas. You are having 90 degrees. I don't think I want that.
You know, here we are extreme.
No. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Brother, Batisewe, how are you, my brother? Okay. We are in North Carolina. Dr. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, and how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I think I called the wrong number for someone, 770, that is the wrong number. Batisewe, how are you?
Wonderful. I'm good, Roger. You know, thank you for the report in Canada. You know, remember they said when the rabbit came went to Gusto China. You are very, I mean, I always look forward to hear you giving us the report what's happening in Canada. You know, being a Zambian and going through what you're going, I really enjoy it to hear the report
from
Canada.
Yes.
I'm doing good.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Again, a lot of news, what is happening all over the world. Today we have so much news which are happening from Zambia. Some of them, Nathan, and those who are listening online to me, quite funny what our president did for the Labor Day celebrations. I don't know if, Nathan, you were able to have a chance to listen to that.
No, I didn't. I just read it. I think, was it like a one or two line statement he made?
Yes, he says, after they call him, Mr. President, can you please say something? And then he says, there is nothing to say. The workers are suffering. Let's stop this. We say things all the time. We say same things all the time. Let's stop this parade. Let's go home. Let's all go home. And the minister wanted to plead with him. There are presents or gifts to be presented to people. No. There's nothing to present. Go and present them where they work, and he left.
That's King Cobra for you. He doesn't pretend. I said it before that the president is a very consistent person, okay? He doesn't pretend. He doesn't pretend, Roger.
Give me your take, Nathan. Give me your take. He doesn't pretend. What do you mean? What do you mean he doesn't pretend? Because if you allow people, you and me, I think we're in Zambia, the independence celebrations, how we prepared, if it was a school, you prepared the whole week. If it was Labor Day, the company spent money buying suits. They spent money to do all sorts of preparations. They are excited. We are going to march for the leader of the nation. And the best you can do as a president is to tell them we are wasting our time here. Let's just go home.
Mm. Well, here is the thing, and I know a lot of people listening out there may think that I'm just trying to be, unreasonable or whatever. Isn't it better for you to be real, to be who you are? It doesn't matter what position you hold. I'm being honest with you, Roger. This is, the president is who we have known him to be from time immemorial. We've always called him man of action. Wasn't he being a man of action by saying, go present the gifts at the workplace and let's go home? He was just being real. Me, that's the way I look at it. I mean, we were just talking about Mother's Day here, and Matilda, I think, asked one of the ladies and said, should we make Mother's Day an everyday thing? Or just a special day in the year? And one of them said, if we make it an everyday thing, it will lose its value and it will just be another day. You see, the thing is, human beings or Africans for that, political events are ceremonial events. And you simply go you simply going through the motions. You give a speech, you present a gift. The man was just trying to be real. The people are suffering. Let's go home. Simple.
Okay. Dr. Patrick, you agree with Nathan?
I do. In part, I do. We're talking about an individual that was present before, during, and after the nationhood of Zambia. And he's seen it all, and he's been with all five presidents of Zambia. And when you get to that point, you must allow some time for frustration. And sometimes when you see the pomp and circumstances, and he's reflecting back to what he's gone through, what the country has gone through together, sometimes you get to the point of saying, whatever. You know that saying, whatever? and maybe this was that particular time, and when some were saying, well, let's do this and let's celebrate, and he's saying, are you kidding me?
Yep.
We still have a lot of work to do. So, yes, I agree with Nathan.
Mm-hmm. Roger, I like that expression, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Therefore, are we then in agreement or in conclusion that some of these things should maybe be phased away? They are not serving any purpose.
Well, I wouldn't phase it away. I would add substance to it. I would add some weight to it. If you're going to celebrate a particular event, and if you can reflect back to an event that is worthwhile praising, then that's a good thing. But if you're just doing it because it's that time of the year, then maybe you shouldn't praise it as much. Bring some substance to the table. Bring some foundation to the table, and then move on and celebrate.
Because Roger, to add on to what Dr. Patrick is saying, reflect on Labor Day celebrations, okay? If we are able to extract the speeches that have been given over the 50 years that we've been independent, like
yes.
Dr. Patrick has said, you know, make it meaningful, okay? Give some real statistics that
yes.
we have grown from here to there. In this is 2014. 2013, the unemployment rate was at this stage. Now we are here, okay? Address real issues. Don't just give a political statement. Make a speech or put something into the program that everybody is going to relate to and say, yeah, that was really a Labor Day. You know, like Dr. Patrick has said, probably the president has seen it all and is tired. Give some And they give them bicycles. What gift do they give them? Do you remember some of the things? I remember they give them bicycles. I don't know whether they still do sewing machines. I don't even know what anybody would do with a sewing machine now. And, you know, things like that. Make it meaningful. Labor Day. I mean, it make it real. Don't make it through just going through the motion ceremony. Let it be substance. Add substance to it.
Yeah, I remember they gave them watches, stuff, and stuff like that. But it's a good point you make. 281 sounds like Sister Clotilde here. Good morning. Okay, she's listening to us. Just the other topic which preceded us here. I think we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it as we go. There are other issues. As always, I think reports coming, Dr. Patrick from Zambia, of the opposition, they are unable to do what they want to do. I don't know if we should just take it as a political mechanics or whatever it is, but I think PF are being blamed for not allowing the other political parties to hold rallies, to have freedom of expression in the country. Those, I think, who are doing whatever they do in Zambia, at one point, they realize what they have done to their fellow Zambians as not good. They give the UPND a rally permit to go and they assemble. At the last minute, they cancel it. I guess only as the Americans would say, only in America. I think we can say only in Africa. Only in Africa, yeah. There is a story in Zambia Daily Mail of a lion, Nathan Chavuma, which is on loose. Yeah, it is loose. The lion has killed two cows in the area. This is in Chavuma. So we hope the authorities there can do something about it. There is another report.
It's looking for food, Roger. Maybe it's gotten old, or it's weak, or it's sick, so the easiest food it can find is cattle, which is in a craw, locked up, easy prey. So maybe the wildlife people need to find out what's wrong. I know what we normally do back home, just shoot it and forget about it. No, tranquilize it or whatever the word is. I mean, immobilize it, do some vet work on it and find out what the problem is with the animal. It's probably weak or it can't hunt anymore. Does the report tell us how old the animal is or how it
looks? No. The 3-4 line report just says this has happened. And there is also another report in, I don't know if it's Nyimba district, a man was attacked by a hippo. This is not very, very common, but the man was drawing water in a canoe, and then he was attacked by a hippo. Those are just some of the stories which come via the report I'm interested about, Dr. Patrick, here is half of rural Zambia to get electricity. You know, this radio, we are big on this rural thing. When I saw headlines like that, and this is what the statement says, it is actually in 3 lines here. The Rural Electrification Authority has released a strategic plan for 2014-2018, which aims to increase electrification rate in rural areas from 3% to 51% by 2030, in line with the Rural Electrification Master Plan. I thought this is big, Dr. Patrick.
It is. It's extremely huge, this announcement. I would like to touch it with what type of electrification is going to be produced. Is it going to be coal which gives us a lot of problems. Is it going to be hydroelectric, which is pretty good, pretty good? Is it going to be solar? We just need to know what type of energy is going to be used, what type of resource is going to be used for this electrification. But on face value, and it's outstanding.
Dr. Patrick, those are very valuable points you bring. The two distinctions you make, I'm not sure Zambians or Africa are even anywhere close producing electrification using coal. So the best we go usually is hydro or solar. Thinking about the amount of energy which we have in Africa, the sun, shouldn't we be looking more, maybe even as we give input to this board, as we advise them, shouldn't we be looking more to solar? The cost of this nation will be $1.1 billion. So this is a lot of money. This is a lot of investment. And those who are listening online, I want you to look to Zambia. There is this project going on. Think of how you are going to get this pie, a piece of pie, or $1 billion. What kind of investment can you take to Zambia to invest into electrification of rural areas? But Dr. Patrick, isn't it much quicker, much easier, easily make the distribution if we went into rural areas with a renewable energy like solar, rather than the creation of dams, which have their own ecological issues?
Well, as you aptly stated about the ecosystem, there has to be at least three complementary studies, and this is probably have already been undertaken. But one, you have to look at the environmental impacts. If you look at the Aswan Dam in Egypt, there was a dislocation of a great deal of people that were indigenously living in the area. They're no longer there. They're displaced. Also, you have to look at the traditional grounds in which these facilities are going to be built upon. So you don't want to impact on that. Now, let's say you've done that, and you look at hydroelectric, and you look at solar. Solar is only good for a certain period of time during the day. You have to complement it with an alternative source in the evening when the sun goes down. So you have to look at that. Is it going to be biomass and solar energy? Is it going to be hydroelectric and solar energy? Is it going to be solar energy and wind energy? So you have to look at all of these principles. And then who is it going to be? Who is the 50% electricity going to be delivered to? If you don't include it, at least equally being distributed throughout the nation, then you're going to have a problem with respect to disparate treatment, and disparate treatment leads to quiet and then agitated revolt and protest. So those are the things you have to look at. Who is it going to impact, and if it's going to be the 50%, is it going to be distributed equally?
Roger.
You are listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio, and we are discussing current affairs happening in Zambia. Nathan, go ahead, please. I have two people here. If you want to contribute, please press 1 on your phone, and it will show us you have something to contribute on this. Go ahead, Nathan.
Yes, what I wanted to understand is that report. It says this project is starting now and is expected to end in 2030, or where does 2030 come in?
Good question. By 2030, 50% should have. By 2030,
50% of rural Zambia should have.
Yes.
That's
That's
and I did the math. I think I'll still be alive.
I like that. We'll still be alive. My question is that, okay, this is 2014. We're talking about, yes. Is it 16 years?
16 years.
How
time.
Many years? Pardon?
16 years, yes, you're right. 16 years time.
16 years time.
Yeah.
Give that percentage again. I have a problem with these figures.
They're saying by 2030, 51% of Zambia rural areas will have electricity by 20. Yes. Go ahead.
By 2030, and you are saying currently it's at what? Is it 3 or 5%?
Currently it's at 3%. Yes.
3%.
Very low. Very, very low. Very, very low.
51% in 16 years. Dr. Patrick, how does that sound?
Terrible.
I think it's terrible.
It's terrible.
That's the feeling I have. That's why I'm asking this question, Roger. 16 years,
in 16 years, it should be 80%. And when 80% or better. And when we're saying 50% in 16 years, I'm thinking that half of that development is leaving the country into the international community's pocket. If much of the development will remain in Zambia and it's going to feed into local industries, I bet you can increase that percentage from 50 up into the 80s. So whenever I hear something of that nature, 16%, in 16 years, just 50%, that's terrible.
The only hope is that probably those who have dominated the political policy-making platform would have phased out by now. I'm not condemning them to death, no. I'm just saying we probably should have had a different breed of politicians who are going to be thinking different. That's what I'll say.
Yes, I agree. And even that 50% in 15 years' time, Dr. Patrick, knowing the way we manage affairs in Zambia or in Africa, if there even at 10, less than 10 or 20% of what you're talking about, it probably would be a miracle too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The policymakers, let me use the policymakers, not politicians. The policymakers... Mm. Breed of policymakers would have changed by then, because at the rate we are going, that's why I asked the question. I said 51% in 16 years, and you heard what Dr. Patrick said. I said, Roger, I'm having a problem with these figures. You can't be talking about 51% in 16 years. 51% in 5 years, I will agree.
I like that. Jabez, good morning.
Jabez, this is Abraham.
I meant you actually, Zebron. Sorry, my brother.
no problem. Yeah, okay. I was going to make some short points, but I know Dr. Patrick made a lot of them, which were very great. For me personally, looking at I think there's kind of echo here. Are you guys hearing echo here?
Not really. No.
A little bit, but so okay.
I'm good. Okay. For me, as Nathan says that he has a problem, you know, Zambia has been stagnant when it comes to electrical development for a very long time. So as much as I'll be excited that in 15 years we'll get at least 51%, I'm also, I don't really think it's something that we can really depend on. You know what I'm saying? Because as politicians, as a breed of politicians change, as you guys say, the new politicians will come in and change everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, as Sada said, they'll tell you, in 90 days, there'll be no pit latrines. You know? There'll be no pit latrines. Everyone will be flashing. People will be like, yeah! In 90 days, there'll be no one on the street. Everyone will have a stand to sell their goods on. People will be like, yeah! You know, so you look at 16 years from now, And you look at how, which kind of politicians will come in. Once they come in, they want also to fulfill their pocket before they think of anything else. So try and see, like, okay, I'm in right now. I may be here for 5 years. So what do I do? I have to make sure that if I'm gone in 5 years, I won't have to suffer anymore. That's the mind of the Zambian politician. When I'm gone in 5 years, I won't have to suffer anymore. Okay, my kids, they have full accounts. They have some dealership. My friends, just in case I'm no longer there, I have somewhere to call. I want to hook up my friends. So they'll hook up their friends with ministerial positions. By the time they're done with all that, that's 3 years in office done. The last 2 years, they start building roads and everything to make sure that they are reelected again. You know what I'm saying? So that's the mind of the Zambian politician. But what's the positive part about this? The positive part about this is that this is a very, very good impact on the Zambian environment, because if this could go into the rural areas where Zambians use most of the like woods and everything, the cut off trees to use that charcoal to produce energy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if this could go into rural areas, this would be the place where it's more needed, so that people could save trees, and that trees could help with the, you know, this global warming and the environment or something. So this could be a very, very, very positive thing in Zambia. You know what I'm saying? Especially in the rural areas, you know. And the problem, the main problem could be, as Dr. Patrick said, how are they going to distribute this? You know what I'm saying? If they say that, oh, we're going to give Mongo and Kasama and these states, these provinces only, for now, 15 years, they're going to have the electricity. And then the rest will give you the time. That would be a very, very bad planning. You know what I'm saying? In my view, they'll have to at least reach out into all the provinces and then select some places and tell them, we're going to start with these in the next 15 years. And then as you keep moving, the other places here, as we keep distributing, we're going to distribute. But it has to be something that has to be an umbrella kind of a planning. You know what I'm saying? It has to reach at least into all the countries and just like touch into each and every province. Because with the tribalism going on in Zambia, they'll be like, oh, it's because it's SADC. They've started in Kasama and Amansa. You know what I'm saying? And then they've left the Tongas. This is tribalism, which might bring now problems and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, that's just my view. But let me take
much of the time. That's why they need to start in Mongo. Like you said, the Mongols, they need to start from Mongo.
Yeah.
Why Mongo?
That would be the problem. That would be the question. Why did they start from Mongo? If HH would be the president by then, they'd be like, oh, okay, there is HH. That's why they're starting this in Mongo. We knew that HH likes Tonga. You know what I'm saying? So, HH is not a Tonga, Mongo, a lot of whatever, but, you know. But I would say they just, since they have 15 years to plan, they can have enough resources to start into at least three different provinces at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Because once they start at one point, they can fasten that development. By the time they move to the next place, there'll be some few places that will change. And then once that the next place kind of like slows down a little bit, they'll be like, yeah, in Mongo, they only took 3-6 months to build those. Now they're in Kasama, it's over a year and a half. They haven't even finished half of the job. There'll be noise. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Because Zambians will be seeing each and every development. So I would just say, like, okay, have like maybe, if they're going to have 5 trucks to do this, distribute those 5 trucks into 5 provinces and then blow the whistle at the same time, let the job start. Make sure someone is a supervisor, can travel into all those provinces, make sure that there's equal resources and then distribution. You know what I'm saying? Because Zambia is not like a state where you can just give money to the governors and sort it out. Whoever fails, you don't blame the president. You blame your governor. Take him out and replace him with another one. For this one, we don't have that kind of everything. So each and every project that is done is overheaded by one person either in the government, and he's going to be responsible for all everything. You know, the president's like, yeah, and it's not, you know, the doors must, you know, it's going to stop
good
the president.
Stuff.
Oh, yeah. He started
good
with this
stuff,
one.
My
and
brother,
this one.
Good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. So.
I have a
suggestion. Let's say there's $2 billion for the energy project that's going to deliver 50 or 51% to all of Zambia in 16 years. Let's say there is a billion-dollar project, which means that more than half of that $1 billion will be going into the pockets of the international corporations because they see there's a lot of money, so therefore they can invest, therefore they can get a huge return from it. Why not? why not? Look at that, those billions of dollars and dedicate, let's say if it's $10 billion, dedicate $3 billion of those monies to a plan in which monies will be sent to every province and every district for the purpose of generating an energy-producing source. Now, these grids will be eventually tied up and funneled into the major grid, but at least you will have 80% or 90% of Zambia having electricity delivered to the provinces and the districts accordingly, because the monies are available and the expertise will be distributed throughout the districts. And therefore, you will have hydro, you will have electric, you will have bio, you will have solar, all forming these microgrids to be united into the major grid in which you will have energy being deliverable. Plus, it won't be just for Kasama. It could be to the northwestern province, the western province, straight across. So I'm suggesting that some of the monies, or a good portion of the monies, come out of the major grid of producing electricity and have it distributed to provinces and districts to have their own micro energy components to deliver the energy to the towns, to the districts, and therefore eventually uniting into one super grid.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Sorry for interrupting, but, you know, and then the other concern that I would have over this project is that as Zambians, we tend to find opportunities when such announcements are made. What do I mean by this? By this, I mean that if someone says, oh, in the next 16 years, Zambia is going to start distributing electricity to maybe five provinces, what are they going to need? They're going to need this and that and that. Now you start having like the Minister of Works and Supplies getting the contracts with Chinese or people trying to, you know, make sure that at least those guys are given a huge contract to do a small work, and then they're given whatever. That project is going to look very good on a piece of paper, but in the actual sense, half of the money that is going to be spent there is going to go into the pocket because there's some contracts that
stop,
this one.
Stop right there. Zebron, stop right there. And this is the worrisome part, Dr. Patrick, and everyone who is on the call listening online. There is a story in Zambia Weekly, Dr. Patrick, if you looked at it, Nitrogen Chemicals were awarding a contract, huge tender, $50 million, and we are finding ministers are giving each some of the tenders are going to the ministers, companies, those who are affiliated.
Exactly.
I don't know how we end this, Dr. Patrick. I don't know how we end this because this is what has killed our development in Africa. Can Roger go to Zambia today, be given a position? I'm going to probably be behaving the same way. How can I borrow just a little bit of accountability, which I see here in Canada, which I see in the United States, and export it to my country, Zambia, Dr. Patrick, to make sure that if it's a $10 project, that $10 is used on that project and nothing else. What can we do, Dr. Patrick?
Yeah.
What we're talking about is what we've always talked about in the United States and in the global community. We're talking about corruption. Now, how can we address corruption? There's many ways to address corruptions outside of imprisonment. One way of addressing it is to take excess or take advantage of the computer system that we live in, the ITT system. If you want a particular project to go up, you don't go to the individual and say, here's $5 million, build it. What you do is you have an electronic banking system in which you will get certain monies based on the progress of the particular project. So therefore, if you're charged, if an individual is charged with building a hydroelectric plant, then and you have to do it within 3 years, the amount of money that it will take, let's just say it takes one million to do this. This money will be distributed throughout the 3 years, and it will not only be paid until certain milestones are met. If those milestones are not met, you don't get the money.
Yeah.
So, and you can track this electronically. You can do this.
Yeah.
You can build in systems, or I would call integrity systems. So therefore, no longer should you say, I have $1 billion, I want you to build a hydroelectric plant, here is $1 billion. No, you don't do that. You say, you tell me you can do this. You're the primary contractor, and you're going to hire subcontractors, and you must let me know, and you must prove that these subcontractors can do the work that they're going to be paid for. Once you do that, then we're going to give you X amount of dollars over a period of time to pay for the equipment, to pay for your staff, to pay for this and that major instrument. But you don't give a lump sum, and you track this individual and this company.
To those who are listening online and those who are on the call today, we had a whole thing, I don't know, the right way to use the American way would be messed up. So we should have 20 minutes before our discussion ends, but our system is showing only 2 minutes. So if we drop, we'll just wait for Nathan's discussion to start on top of the hour. If it doesn't drop, we'll continue talking, but those who will be listening online, you will not be able to listen, only the people on the call, but you can listen to a recorded discussion. So everyone, if it drops, just know the discussion has ended, and then we wait for about 20 minutes or so until Nathan's discussion starts on top of the hour. Something just went wrong today. We don't know what it is, but we'll continue talking.
We will be talking about Boko Haram. So everybody,
yeah, that's correct. Nathan is talking about Boko Haram, and I have a lot of questions, Dr. Patrick, on Boko Haram. Do we have our own Boko Harams in the way I think our women or our young children, even in Zambia, are treated? Least we forget. But on the issue which really has moved me, presented by Dr. Patrick and our good friend Reverend Ye, that is the issue of, you know, good numbers sounding so good, and at the end of the day, they don't do any good to us. We have $1 billion, which the government is saying they are going to allocate to the electrification of rural areas, but like everyone else is skeptical here, that if $1 million will be spent on electrification, that would be surprise. What say you?
Thank you, Roger, again for this opportunity. And if you allow me, can I just say about a little bit about, I wanted to make a comment about President Sata on Labor Day. It's a little bit disappointed with the president, you know. I like the term that the American use here, the bully pulpit. And I like to just sometimes go on the internet and read about the bully pulpit, the way the leader uses his position to speak for the masses, you know. And that's telling you that Vasata, I don't think he's aware of what people are going through on every day, you know, for him just to... That's an opportunity for him to stand up and to let the people know that he's on their side, you know. Especially like since independence, the way the miners live on those small houses since independence, no good running water, you know. And he could have used that day to real bring awareness and challenge the companies and challenge everyone who's doing business and say, let's improve the condition of our country, you know. But on the other side, the thing you just asked me to contribute on, Roger, as you are in a diaspora, you know, the one thing I like about Americans is when something happens, either the senator or they will call the CEOs of that company and sit them in the front and ask them questions, and you know, and I hope that we can learn that from Zambia. No matter what, if something like that happens, let the minister, other minister, question them in front of the whole nation, because that's country resources, and we'll learn from, and everyone can learn, just like we are learning from this. This system is not perfect, but I love it when something happens, they will sit and let the whole world know, like the Germans right now, and which is has interest me, and I'm going to start looking into the way their system of government works. They want to call Snowden, you know, to come in front of the lawmakers and ask him questions and to learn from that. And I hope our system is going to be like that. You know, no matter how powerful you are, sit in front of people and ask, you say, oh, these are billions. Like Americans, they do give money to Zambia to do for projects. But you don't hear about it. The government, even the president, if I was the president, I would have said, you know, we did receive this much money from the Western countries, you know, and that this is what we did with this money. We do contribute, but we don't hear anything about it. No one in the government says, you know, we received so much billion, this is what we did with it. So thank you, Roger. I know other people have something to contribute, but
no, very valuable, very valuable. Yes, very valuable contributions, and I think what Nathan and Dr. Patrick said was true too. Going to these rallies, it becomes just show up, but you also bring in another dimension. You also bring in another dimension by saying the bully pulpit should be used by the president to motivate the nation, to motivate the workers who have come. Every day is not the same day. I guess the same old, same old, but every day is not the same day. We need to hear from our father, from our leader. He should not be tired to say, I talk to you every day. I'm not interested in talking to you today. I don't think that is the right approach. In my view, and your idea of inviting the private sector in the room to be part of the process of what is happening, I think is one of the excellent things which I think has been brought on the table this morning. Dr. Patrick, the Electrification Board, Zebron here, Nathan, and those who are on the call, I think they should call the private sector to be part of the process, so they can find which part of this project can be well managed by the people in the private sector. Because regardless of where you go, government is never efficient. That I've come to know anywhere in the world. Phone number 412, the code. Last number 5167. This looks like the missing Mr. C. Anyway, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I knew it was you. Go ahead. Go ahead. That was my brother, by the way.
I'm okay. It's just that my schedule is really bad. That's why sometimes I don't contribute. Yes, but I had a chance to call in today.
Batimbe, my brother.
Go
ahead.
I think, as Dr. Patrick has always been saying, we have to look at the foundation of things. Here, why you see senators questioning someone if they've done something, in the Constitution, it allows them to do that. Now, the Constitution in Zambia, because the Constitution is the foundation of everything, it's a law. Now, if the law is not there, it's a compass of the country. You don't have a compass. You don't go nowhere. You're not starting nothing. So the most important thing that should be done is the constitution on the ground. Look at how here judges are picked. In Zambia, you can pick anyone. Well, if he's a lawyer, just say, oh, you are the judge. You can do also some things you can go around and manipulate. But here you can't. If you pick someone, the center has to be in there to say, oh, he's a good person. They question him. In Zambia, we don't question no one. We just pick someone. Hey, Mr. Simba, you're now the minister of what? It's done. So I think we must look at the constitution of Zambia as well. That's a tool number one to make sure. If the money if the money comes from England, from whatever, and stuff like that, how is the money managed in Zambia? What does the constitution say about that money that you receive? Probably it's quiet. So now, if I become the president and Mr. Simbaya, I will just do anything I want to do. You can't question me because the constitution doesn't say that. You see, this is where the biggest problem we have is the constitution of Zambia is not able to allow you or even the senator, or which are called MPs, member parliaments, to do certain things. So then they are toothless.
I may...
Exactly.
I agree with you, although I want to deviate just a little bit from what you are saying, Vasimbeya. Dr. Patrick, yesterday I was watching Growing Hope. Growing Hope is, I think, something MSNBC have done, and they were in Atlanta yesterday, Atlanta, Georgia. On one of the discussions, I think it's Chris Hayes, he was interviewing the former NWCP president, I've forgotten his name. I think he said something very profound, Dr. Patrick. Whatever we are going to complain, he was talking about the black vote in United States, how powerful it is becoming. And yet we, the black people ourselves, we don't know how powerful our vote has become. We are not demanding. We saw a very small group in the Tea Party organization. They were very, very small compared to the black vote. But their demands, you could...
Oh, we're still here.
I Roger faded off. I guess you and I and a few other people are still on.
Yes. I guess the program is cut.
Dr. Patrick.
Yeah.
Dr. Patrick, this is Matilda. I think Roger has dropped off. Something must have happened.
Okay. Matilda, let me just say that when the brother spoke about the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
That answers 100% what Roger was alluding to as to the vote.
Yes,
the vote
absolutely.
Is folded all into the Constitution. And if we could just have a loop of what the brother said about the Constitution, how important it is and how it manages the entire system, just loop it. Because I agree with that 100%. Everything that we do is based on the Constitution, and we should not let that Constitution that's being reformed or developed in Zambia, the new Constitution, slip away. We should stay on it, make sure we have the laws, and make sure we have all of the exigencies that we need to be present in that Constitution. So if we can just keep looping what he said about the Constitution. That's it. That's the bottom line. I agree with him 110,000%.
I believe, was that Mr. Sakala? Is that the last person who spoke?
I think Mr. Simbeya.
Oh, Mr. Simbeya.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Mr. Simbeya, thank you. Yes, that his contribution just hit the mark.
Yes.
I believe somebody else was trying to say something before... before Roger came on, or I'm sure they were echoing your...
It was pretty much, it was me. You know, I was just going to, you know, concur with him. You know, pretty much like what he said, you know, Matilda, you know that, you know, in Zambia, you know, everything is run by the president. The president has so much power to pretty much, like, decide, do anything. And then when the previous brother said about the Labor Day speech, whereas I just decided, I say, I talk to you every day. I have nothing to talk to you. You know what I'm saying? And then he went back.
to me, it shows that SATA has no boss. For here in the United States of America, Barack Obama is the most powerful president in the world. But he has people that are watching him. That's the Congress. So he knows that everything that he has done in the past, you know, they are watching everything that he has done. They're trying to scrutinize, like, the Benghazi, all that stuff. They're trying to scrutinize him. So he's also watching what he has. But because it's in the Constitution of the United States that the Congress will be watching the president, you know, the president also looks to the Congress, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? If anything, whatever, they have to go to the Supreme Court. But in Zambia, you know, because the Congress here, they have the power to do anything they can in their power if the president has done something wrong, to impeach the president and take him out of the office and replace him with the vice president until the elections are had. In Zambia, we do not have that provision. No matter what the president does, he has to wait until the end of the term. You know what I'm saying? Because if the president knows that something is going on with the parliament and the parliament is trying to mess him up, he can just wake up the following day and say, I've dissolved the parliament. I need new elections. You know what I'm saying? Just like that. And that's a provision that is not available here in the United States of America. So we can really learn from big nations like the U.S. and their constitution and implement it into our government. You know, we can learn so much with this modern technology that has come in. We can learn so much, take out stuff that does not work for us, leave stuff that work for us, and add more stuff that work for us in the Zambian constitution. And from there, we can start from there. Because right now, no matter what kind of development we do, if our constitution is messed up, we are nothing. Because people continue to steal money and they'll be protected by the same constitution that is not working, you know.
Because mm-hmm. that point, I believe, Zebron, you are making is it also goes to this one thing. Like Vasim Beya said and Dr. Patrick has affirmed, you see, in this political system or in this culture, if we can use that word, they respect the Constitution. No one is above the Constitution. So like you have rightly said, even if President Obama is the most powerful president, so to speak, in the world, the system is designed in such a way that Congress, the Senate, and other government organs serve as checks and balances.
Exactly.
You see, in our situation, it's not like that. Because let's just give another example. Look at during the campaigns. Here, they do talk about the source of income for a particular political party. This PAC or that organization gave so much. They tell you the organizations that are standing behind the Democrats and behind the Republicans. But in Zambia, you don't even know who's funding the campaign. You don't. You were just told that the Chinese bought all those vehicles for MMD and the campaign Nigeria they were using. But it's not authentic, ladies and gentlemen. So the Constitution is very important, and it needs to be respected and honored.
Exactly.
Look at let's go back to the early days of PF coming into government. People were being put into positions and being appointed into positions without following the laid down procedure or constitutional procedure, because the president in Zambia is the most supreme and most powerful person. So it's very important that the constitution is respected and followed. That's a very critical point. We need to wind up here. I don't know whether Roger has managed to come back, but I do doubt. Let me get 30 seconds comments from Dr. Patrick, Zebron, and probably Bas. Then we can conclude very quickly.
I just would like to say that Sambai has really animated me. And from this point on, if Matilda, Roger, you, Nathan, could have a constitution, Zambia constitution spot, giving us weekly updates as to where it is and who's doing what would be fantastic. That way we can continue to have the pressure on the Zambian government to do this constitution, to have it come to fruition.
Zebron, very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a good discussion. I've learned a lot from Brother Simbea, Dr. Patrick, and everyone of you. As I said, we're coming back to the constitution, and I would love to see, as the new constitution gets progresses, I want to see how the subcommittees are you know, to be included in the constitution, like the way that they are here, you know, like, no, not members of parliament just going to parliament and just sitting there letting them know. Let them also divide into subcommittees. This committee is in charge of looking at elections, this is their fair and balance. This committee is looking at finances. This committee is looking at development, so that those people should be